difficult times in the employment conditions in those rural sectors. So that's the second presentation. We're going to touch briefly on the introduction. We'll present the specialization model implementation plan, the rationale behind our proposal, and what considerations we had to make to come up with the plan. And we talked to the issue of the tools of trade, information technology system, and the problematic sector. Over the years, the inspectorate experienced a high turnover, resulting in the loss of recruited skills and competences. In our approach to inspection, we adopted a generalist approach to all aspects of our work. The end result of this approach was a general decline in the enforcement capabilities. New sectoral determination introduced added to the increase in the scope of work for our inspectors. As a response to this, the orientation of the inspectorate became necessary. To improve the enforcement capabilities through the implementation of specialization competency-based training, Treasury allocated $2.8 million for the 2012 and 2 million for the 2013 financial year. And the ministerial approval was obtained to create post based on the allocation letter from Treasury, which was saying we need to add numbers of inspectors. However, we then had a meeting with the Treasury with regard to this, because the allocation letter was not helping us to do what we wanted to do. So we then had a subsequent meeting with Treasury, giving them progress on the implementation of the professionalization. And in that meeting, it was felt that they need to be a revision of the allocation letter. In fact, Treasury themselves, they acknowledged that the letter that they gave, the wording of the letter that they gave to us, was not right. They then sent a revised letter which says we can start with the implementation of specialization. And then we say that therefore the progress that is being made to fill establishment with new posts. We then have to look at the model that will carry the kind of functions that we envisage when we implement specialization. And we think this model serves a departure from the current practice where an inspector has to do everything. And let me just give the context to that. Currently, if you are appointed as an inspector in the department, you are expected that you will be able to go out and do inspections with regards to the enforcement of all the sectoral determinations that we have. And also, if you are appointed as an occupational health and safety inspector, you are expected that you will be able to implement or enforce the provisions of the Act and all the 20 regulations that you have in the OSH Act, which is something that is really a problem. So this specialization approach that is taken is a departure from the current practice. We're saying that what it does is it provides for specialization and career pathing for an inspector, because now what you can do is you choose the area where you think the organization can develop you in. For instance, if your interest lies within agriculture, we can then develop you in that field so that you know everything that has to be known about agriculture, wholesale and retail, and so forth. Also, what it does, it provides for better monitoring and enforcement of the labor laws, and it will enable the inspectorate to measure the impact of legislation in areas of specialization. I'll come back to the slide. I don't know whether you do have this in your printout. This is the kind of model that we envisage that we will implement. And you can see that this is a provincial setup. In a province, you will have a provincial chief inspector who will be responsible for the work of the inspector that is in the province. And you'll have a person that will deal with employment equity, social security, and all issues relating to basic condition of employment. And in that stream of, for instance, the PCA, you have all your sectoral determinations that fall under the PCA. Then you need to have an inspector that will specialize in the different areas, for instance, your agri inspector. In provinces where you have the greater proportion of the work that has to be done by inspectors of agriculture in nature, you will then have more inspectors in that area of focus, which is agriculture. The wholesale and retail, the private majority, hospitality, those are the areas after the sectoral determination that we administer as a department. Obviously, there are more sectoral determinations than those. But what we're saying is, in areas where there are similarities in terms of the different legislation, we will have inspectors doing one or two things. Then you have your social security. Already we have those posts. We have what we call payroll auditors. Those are the chief inspectors that go out and look at the whether companies have complied with unemployment insurance fund and whether they are contributing to the fund, and also look at the whether the contributions and what the companies have declared is in line with what is contained in their book. So they look at that as well. The effect that the company is saying we have contributed and we have proof, they don't just stop at that. They go deeper and look at it. So what we're looking at is and enhancing the work that the social security guys are doing to cover also the compensation aspect of the work that we do. And in each and every province, you'll have what we call a statutory services, people that take out cases to labor court, and currently we don't have that. Everything has to go to head office. In especially those provinces where you don't have a labor court. In the provinces where you have a labor court, what happens is that if a case is an opposed matter, it will then go to head office. But if the matter is not opposed, the province can handle it. But there are no people dedicated to do this job. What we're saying now is that you need to have dedicated people who are able to make sure that we take about cases and we spend a lot of time so that we can win these cases. And then you have the occupational health and safety stream, where you saying you typically in province you'll have construction guys who will be looking at the construction work, the electrical side of things. You'll have people who will be looking at the explosives and major hazard installations, and in some instances you have people be looking at diving, because it's also our responsibility. We administer diving regulations, and we in all the provinces we do not have anybody who dies, and that's why we need to make provision for diving. And also we were trying to cover the issue of the health and hygiene, occupational health and occupational health and occupational hygiene. The mechanical engineering as well, we're making provision for that. So this is a typical model that you're likely to find in a province. And this model is based on ensuring that we build human resource capacity at both the office and provincial offices, and we explore the best possible ways of utilizing the limited funding for the benefit of the organization, ensure that there is clearly defined career path for inspectors, and we also recognize the fact that provinces do not require the same human resources, and we had to look at and understand the economic activities of different provinces. And we had to look at the contribution of each province to our work. And we emphasize that the recruitment process, adverts and all that, will commence on the 20th of September. With this model, we hope that the retention rates of inspectors will be improved. The other issue that maybe let me go back a little bit to the slide that I said we here we're saying what we've done is we asked provinces and we said to them, given the funding that we have and given what we want to do, the reality is, if you look at that model, we will not be able, given the funding that has been allocated to us, to fill each and every vacancy there. We will not be able to do that. We then said to provinces, can you then indicate to us which areas of need you want us to start with? And they have done that. Each and every province has done that. And based on what we received from provinces, we've then allocated the creation of the positions as they stand there on the slide, with Gauteng 13, KZN 14, Western Cape 13, Eastern Cape 12, Limpopo 7, and up to Northern Cape, which is Bush 7. And tools of trade, key to the effective functioning of the inventory is availability of tools of trade. And the our inspectors are field workers, and therefore they have to be out on the field every day. The department has policies that enable it to provide tools of trade to the inspectorate. We have a telecommunication policy that enables our inspectors to get a cell phone allowance, which has been kept at 1,000 rand per month. And we have a subsidized policy that enables our inspectors to apply for a subsidized car. Alternatively, inspectors can use pool cars available at the labor centers. And currently, we have procured 227 vehicles, with additional 250 vehicles currently on order, just to make sure that we increase the pool. The other aspect that we had to cover was the aspect relating to information technology system. The information management is an important element in our work. The inspection enforcement case management system development commenced in August 2007 and was required to be completed by September 2009. Siemens failed to meet two deadlines, and after nine project managers and more than six so-called user acceptance tests, the system has not been signed off to date. The last test in July 2012 produced about 147 errors. Only one full workflow, which we were able to do end-to-end test on it, was ever conducted in a production environment in July 2012 and resulted in some critical errors being raised. We have terminated our engagement with Siemens on all applications development. The department has now developed a new information communication and telephony strategy. As a consequence of this strategy, a new service provider with the requisite competencies will be brought on board to finalize all the outstanding applications. This process, however, should be completed in the next 3 to 6 months. The last aspect that we were asked to brief the committee on is on the problematic sectors. Our labor market is characterized by huge non-compliance with the labor market policies throughout all the sectors. The increased number of complaints recorded at our labor centers bears testimony to this. In 2011-12 financial year, in excess of 154,000 complaints were recorded. Most complaints came from the following sectors: security, hospitality, agriculture, forestry, wholesale and retail sectors. These sectors have, as a result of continual complaints received by our department and themselves, a label of being problematic sectors. The challenges these sectors pose range from non-payment of overtime and wages and paying workers below minimum wage, which is highly prevalent in the farming sector, poor state of employee dwellings, which in most cases these dwellings are inhabitable, non-payment of provident fund contributions over to PCRA in the case of the security industry, the non-compliance with occupational health and safety, illegal deductions. It is for this reason that all the sectors mentioned below have been put on our radar screen for full compliance and auditing. This is the breakdown of the province of the target that we have, and we've broken it down to province for our 2012-2013, specifically targeting the problematic sectors. And the security, you see that there are targets related to each and every province. And wholesale and retail, agriculture, forestry, domestic, hospitality. And in total, we anticipate that we will be doing 87,795 inspections covering the problematic sector. And this target is actually based on the current human resource capacity that we have as a department. This is, here we just wanted to give the committee a sneak preview of the level of compliance based on the work that we've done thus far, just for quarter one. For the Eastern Cape, for instance, we have 766. We targeted that we do 466. We ended up doing 436, and of that, none of those companies complied. And you go down in the agriculture sector, you see that the general compliance is around 62.4, and those are just the funds. So these are just the funds that we have visited for the last. For the first quarter of this financial year. If you look at forestry, we have a serious problem there where you have 17.6 as a total compliance given work that we've done as far. If you look at wholesale, it should be wholesale and retail, I don't know what happened there. That wholesale and retail, we also, if you look at the level of compliance, it's hovering around 59%. There's some work that we seriously have to do there. This hospitality, you're looking at almost the same thing there. I think there's an overlapping of a slide here, where your wholesale is not properly reflected because that's like move to the other side. Private security, that's the work that we've done. We're seeing the level of compliance, given the work that has been done thus far, is about 55.3%. The inspections done to date are indicating that in almost all the sectors, the level of compliance with the law is low. As any non-compliance noted, a legal notice is issued to force the employer to comply. We are currently following up on the notices issued to establish where they have been complied with. So that's the end of the first part of the presentation, Chair. I'm going to quickly just load this one.
Chairperson, this is the second part to the presentation, which will be covered by the Acting Director for Employment Standards. The post will be filled soon. There is process underway because the former Director of Employment Standards got promoted to Chief Director in IDS, Inspection and Enforcement Services. So Ben Sweeney, who is the acting director, just it's a brief presentation, just give you an overview around the conditions, including minimum wages in these particular sectors. But there's some IT challenge here. You get it now? It seems the memory stick is not compatible with this.
Do we have
Can we show a hard copy? Huh?
Okay.
Okay, the second presentation, as Tobile has indicated, is going to focus more on the on the sectors which are identified to be talking about the sector. The presentation is going to be based on, I'm going to reflect briefly on the power and statutes, the conditions of employment and wages in the five sector, which is current equity, hospitality sector, public sector, forestry sector, and the wholesale and retail sector. The power and statutes in regard is the basic conditions of employment act, and then we're saying that the employment standards, which is the directorate's mandate, is protect vulnerable workers through the establishment of sectoral determination. Now, just to indicate that the sectoral determination is a sector-specific piece of legislation which provides for minimum conditions of employment and minimum wages in that specific sector. You'll realize when we go on or when we move forward with the presentation that some of the issues which are covered in the sectoral determination are actually different from the conditions which are provided for in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. The Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the Act 35/1997, as amended in 2002, provides for the promulgation of sectoral determination, which establishes minimum wages for workers in a specific sector of the economy. The Basic Conditions of Employment Act further establishes the Employment Conditions Commission, which is a commission advising the minister on the issues pertaining to the sectoral determination. Probably the question one could ask is that when the ECC advised the minister on the issues pertaining to the sectoral determination, what are those key areas which they are focusing on? And in terms of X, there are, you know, four or five areas which they need to be actually, you know, be responding to when advising the minister on the issues relating to the basic conditions or to the sectoral regulations. I will better reflect to those issues when we move along with the presentation. And aim of the organizational objective of the ECC is to protect vulnerable workers in South African labor force, the sectors which are likely to be exploited or where worker organizations and trade unions absent and workers which are not covered by the BCA or any other wage regulation mechanism. As I've indicated, if you're looking at what the Basic Conditions of Employment Act says in relation to the operation of the ECC is that whenever they're coming up with conditions of employment and minimum wages in a specific sector, what they need to be looking at is they need to be looking at the ability of the employer to operate successfully, the ability of the employer to pay the prescribed minimum wages, the cost of living issues, before the allegation issues needs to be taken into consideration before putting any condition or any minimum wage in the sectoral determination. In terms of the employment numbers per sector, in the private security sector, the study which we did in between 2007 and 2010 indicated that in the private security sector, you've got about 413,815 security guards employed. In the hospitality sector, you've got 279,000 employees employed. In the farm worker sector, you've got 629,000 employees. Forestry sector is the lowest with 59,000. And the wholesale retail sector has got about 802,000 employees. Now, as I've indicated, that almost in all the sectoral determinations, because they are based on the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, there are conditions which are sector-specific which are different from what the Basic Conditions of Employment Act will actually prescribe. Like, for instance, in the private security sector, instead of the 45 hours which are prescribed in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, in the private security sector, they are allowed to work for 48 hours per week. When you look into that, they are working on a 12-hour shift, so in essence, they'll be working 4 days. And then the family responsibility leave, which is 4 days currently, and then we'll just review the sectoral determination as from next year, it's going to be 5 days, you know, per annum. Family responsibility leave, you take it when your husband is sick or when your mother is ill, maybe has fallen from the lift or whatever. Then if you're a husband, you want to take care of the wife who has fallen on the list, then you'll take a minute of school. Thank you. And then there's also 6 days study leave, which is actually prescribed in the sectoral determination. I probably need to indicate that in the private security sector, as much as there is an ECC which prescribes on the conditions in the private security sector, but there is a negotiating forum. It's more like a bargaining council, but it's not a bargaining council because there's no representativity. But they've got an arrangement wherein they sit together and, you know, and agree on certain issues which are sector-specific or conditions of employment in the sector. Now, the issue of the 6 days, for an example, study leave is not prescribed in the sectoral, in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, but then it came as a result of that kind of a bargaining process. Hospitality sector, hospitality sector, what I probably need to indicate is that wages are actually set in two ways. That you've got employees who are employing, or employers who are employing workers who are less than 10, and those who are employing more than 10 workers. And what is probably critical in the hospitality sector is that the tips which normally will hear that people are being paid on tips, the sectoral determination doesn't promote that. It says that an employee could enter into an agreement in terms of that commission, after commission kind of a payment, but the employee should always be guaranteed a minimum wage. So a tip will come as a commission on top of the minimum wage. In the farm worker sector, the only thing which is unique there is that there's a deduction for food and accommodation, which is the 10% of the minimum wage. And then we're saying that the deduction should, for both food and accommodation, should happen if the employer provides that benefit free of charge. It doesn't actually charge for that. And in accommodation, when you read the sectoral determination, the accommodation is actually prescribed in terms of what conditions should it actually comply with. Like, for instance,
that there shouldn't be a toilet or pit latrine closer to the house, that there should be an open window and a tap also, you know, those are in the proximity of the house. Forest protector, there is also a guaranteed minimum wage in the forest sector based on the type of a commission work which they're actually involved with, which is more related to task-based payment. So we're also saying in the forest sector that an employer cannot only remunerate workers on the basis of the production per day, but employees should always be entitled or should be guaranteed a minimum wage. You will also know that when we reviewed the forest sector last year, we took actually a decision to say that if looking at both the forest sector and the farm workers, you know, they almost, you know, closely, and at that stage, forest sector was actually paying below the farm workers wage. So we took a decision to say that we probably need to bring it up to the level of the farm worker wage. Hence, I mean, currently there's a few difference in terms of the rent between the worker or the wages in the farm worker sector and the forest sector. In the next year, it will actually be paying the same wage. Wholesale and retail sector, the wages are set on an hourly rate, and also there's a premium which has been actually included in the wages. The reason for the premium is that, for an example, I mean, if an employer, because of the nature of the sector, if an employee works on a Sunday, for an example, he's got an opportunity to say that he's not going to be paid overtime for work on a Sunday, but then he's going to be paid at a higher premium. And also, looking at the nature of the work, which is actually, or the nature of the sector, in terms of saying that the employees, most of them are actually being called casuals, whatever, they don't work on full-time basis. Therefore, if they want to forfeit some of their benefits in lieu of that premium, the sectoral determination does allow that could happen. I mean, if for an example, a person is working for 2 days or for 1 day in a week, if he was to grant a leave to that particular person, you'll realize that it will probably take you 2 years or more than 2 years for that person to qualify for the full leave. Hence, then if he agrees in terms of that premium, then they can be paid at the higher premium and then forfeit those kind of conditions which I've actually outlined too. Now, in the private security sector, minimum wages, I've just taken a grade C as an example. Minimum wages, which is the lowest grade. Remember, in the private security sector, they've dealt away with grade E. Now we're only starting from the lowest grade is actually grade E. On the sector, the area one, which are the more are the metropolitans, the, you know, the bigger areas, urban areas, the wages there are actually 2.7 per month, and then the lowest in area 3 is 2.27 per month, 71 per month. And also it should be noted that in the private security sector, there's also an issue of the provident fund, which is payable. We've recently reviewed the sectoral determination, and again it will be reviewed after a period of 3 years. Again, as I've indicated, here in the private security sector, there is a negotiating process which happens within the parties. Hospitality sector, as I've indicated, is 10 or less employees. Current wage is 2.2 per month. More than 10 employees is 2,495 per month. In the farm worker sector, the minimum wage is 1,503 per month. And the forestry workers is 1,482.70 per month. I mean, I've just explained to that to say that if you're looking at the difference between the two, there's a very thin line, and then hence I've indicated that next year we actually will be having one wage in that particular sector. In also in retail, there's different areas, or the sectoral determination categorize the area in different, South Africa in different areas, like this area A and then area B, on those municipalities which are not listed in the determination. General assistance, which is actually the lowest, ends about 2,299 in area A, and then in area B, it will be ending about 2,006 per month. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Is there another one?
Okay, Honorable
Sibande? Honorable Kroonewald? Honorable Dubier? Honorable Mlenpana, Honorable Mabite, lastly Honorable Jacob.
Yes, sir. Hi.
You see, today, I view this matter different. I'll say why. You see, Jefferson, first of all, my comment is that we must run away from cutting teeth. I wanted to remind the department about their presentation, because if we allow cut and paste, then we are going nowhere. I was noting, I wanted to show you this presentation is somewhere, it's a summary of its slide number, slide 9, slide 11, slide 12. During the presentation, the challenges you raise in your delivery of services, I mean in your delivery of 2010, in their report of 2010-2011, the very same thing which they are saying today, that's where these things are coming from. You check the figures from 2011, now it's 2012. After that, they will tell us something advanced. Some of the challenges you raise in 2010-2011, they are as follows. Lack of information technology system to ensure case management, in which includes registration, referrals, and document management. Second one, inadequate tools of trade, including motor vehicle, cell phones, laptops, and other technical equipment to enable inspectors to do field work and reach out more workplaces and workers. And the third one, problematic sectors in relation to employment standards and workers' rights, security, hospitality, agriculture, forestry. You know, that's a reputation, man. That's my worry. Because here, in slide number 12, the very same thing which were mentioned is also the security. They call most complaints come from security. That's a reputation of what they've raised that time.
Maybe you don't let members throw these things away.
Yes.
And don't.
Yes. Again, the committee requested the Department of Labor to bring the committee on this challenge error mentioned. When was it? In February this year. They were here in February. With the very same thing. Now the very same thing. To me, we are going nowhere. And now, in the response, in one of the slides, they have reported that they spoke about, what is it, I wanted to be specific, about tools of trade. They spoke about acquiring people to apply for cars and also to use tool cars. Where are they? If you can tell us that what, how many people have applied for cars since then till now? Because you depend on the tool cars which are not there. The only development is about the issue of cements, which we have withdrawn in terms of the technology and life, but nothing else. There's nothing, zero. In terms of also of the challenges which they are facing, and you see, I'm a little bit concerned about their proposal in terms of the showing us of in the proposed model. You see, in the proposed model, let me put you practical examples. You go to Mpumalanga, where I'm coming from. You go to Eastern Cape, where geographically spread, how big is the province? If you talk about what I said, from the provincial level. Go to Gauteng, go to Cape, go to Limpopo. Every province, go to Northern Cape, it's very vast. Except if you talk about these models, about symbols, that the one symbol there in the province. Yes, I would understand. But this proposed model, it takes us nowhere. And again, myself, I'll be quite grateful you spoke about this one of the slides of Treasury, about the allocation letter from the Treasury, because I think the Treasury was trying to assist. I will be very much grateful if it can be told exactly what was the argument which made you maybe to have a whatever with the Treasury. But to me, as a whole, to me, it's reputation. I've got a test from several till now will be an improvement. Without going any further, you can check for yourself. This is the reputation. What was reported in February is the very thing. There's no improvement at all. And then also, the issue of compliance. There is a slide where you talk about the issue of compliance. You see, yes, slide number 15. They'll give us statistics about the issue of compliance, and the people are not, what is the department doing? Because this thing was raised again in February. That they are facing a problem of no compliance. In doubt and reporting the same, that is cut and paste. So that's my worry. So I see no reason for us to continue with this, because I'm claiming nothing. That's a reputation. I'll come next. I can cite a lot of examples which prove that there is no improvement since February this year. Because these things were tick-tapped in 2010 to 2011 report. And now we're supposed to have 2011 to 2012 report. But there's no improvement. I humble motto. And lastly, I'm a little bit bubble train. Yes, I agree that there was a person who got a promotion, whatever, but you know, I won't say which department. That's the problem with people who are acting too much. Instead to decide, the department to decide whether to employ that person or whatever. Because if they're acting, it's very difficult to pin down the person who's acting, because of somebody's sin. This is reputation, nothing improvement, zero.
Thank you, Honorable Zwande. That's why we call the department, because they told us their problems in February. You must underline February. We were in Gordon Bay. When we were busy dealing with our strategic planning, Honorable Kulnavar.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm very disappointed that the situation as it is now is not good, because if what Honorable Sebande indicated is correct, then it means we are not going anywhere. And I would like this, if it's true, if you admit it is true, what has been said by Honorable Sebande, then we need to first agree whether we go on with this meeting or we adjourn. We don't want to waste time seated here concentrating on asking questions, reply. We are not here for that. We're here to see the improvement. But then to see progress, then if there is that thing or cut and paste, if it is true, then I should think this meeting must be adjourned. We must just agree. This is a serious offense.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I deal with my colleagues what they raised now. And firstly, we must get our health in order. If our health is not in order, we can't go out and criticize the sectors, how they are functioning in South Africa. So if our health is not in order, we waste our time, as my colleague said just now. I've had a couple of questions. I do not know, must I continue in with it or I'm in your hands, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Many thanks, Chair, to assist. I want to suggest that we pause with our question. I had drafted mine also. I had about six. But I suggest that in the light of what Honorable Sebande said, we pause. We get just a sentence or two, Chairperson, from the department. Is there any change from what we were reported to in February? Because we've got these bullet points of fact emanated in the meeting. We know the DG visited all 9 topics and develop the report and praised us. But unfortunately, the same report that we were appraised with in February is this one. We want an update. If then there is nothing, we call it a day, Chair.
Honorable, yeah? Thank you very much. I'm also as disappointed as some of my colleagues. Yeah, but I would like to caution the committee, because we are the public representing the public outside, and we can't have a situation where we where we play with the taxpayers' money. Because I'm saying playing with taxpayers' money, sending the department back, not engaging them, not assisting them in terms of performing better or what we want to see, how they must perform, and caution committee, they do not put the route of sending a department back. Let's engage them. They are here. Then wasting more than 70,000 on flight and accommodation arrangements. We'll be seeing outside people waste taxpayers money than actually protect the value and the spending expenditure of taxpayers money. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Dubier. Let me say to members, like you say, we ask the department to speak on these issues, but what they have presented, you have presented what we asked for, but you did not deal with in a presentation, you did not deal much with how you have dealt with the challenges. Because you know, that was February, this is now what? September. There should be something that you put in front of us to say, these are the things that we have done. But all in all, let me say, honorable members, let's carry on. And we're going to call them again soon, very soon, or we're coming to Pretoria. We will come to Pretoria because we want to see change. So, ma'am, can you let us finish, please? For now, members, I'm clear with you. Let's engage. Let's hear what they say, whether there is this cut and paste. But from here, we're going to go straight to Pretoria ourselves to meet with them, to get everything what we really... The cut and paste, like I said earlier, Honorable Sibande is looking at the document that you did give to us in February. And this shows that the department, when you are invited in Cape Town, you go back to the other document that you presented. And then you put that in. So I'm really cautioning you to say, can you, as the department, tell us, please tell us, please. Members, can I allow them to put it the other way after we have raised this to know what they say? Are we all in agreement? Honorable Mlemzana?
Madam Chair, because we are being recorded, we have to respond. But one thing, I also agree that we agree with you, but I don't think it will be correct for us to say we are continuing because we want to save taxpayer money. It is not so. I think, Chair, the approach here should be, as I pleaded with you, even before we begin to ask the questions, if we could be briefed, we can remind them if they have forgotten their body, validity. Simply put, Chair, any developments with regard to tools of trade for inspector, we need that. You know, if they can start asking as to what are the developments? Then we'll see, because the questions that we're going to ask are the same questions we asked in February.
Can we give them 5 minutes to caucus? Yes, let's give them 5 minutes to caucus so that they come back, you know, with the right thing. Yeah. Department, you are excused. Just go and talk over things and come and tell us what we really want to see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. They were still taking back to Pretoria.
Yeah. Because they're supposed to take all the reports and then make some sort of summary about improvement to what this parliament is doing. Are they doing what they're supposed to do? Instead of taking minutes, put it on one side and let some drivers pay, you know, pay a lot of money. Friends in the board, if I got to do it, I'm going to ask you.
Salamati, I think we can sit off your mic now. Until I think we understand each other very clearly, and I hope now we're going to get the correct. Because if you were here, let's say for example, I'll cite one example. You know, like, you know, a lot has been said. It has been said in the past about the problems with your semen. What we are more interested to ask is that what was the problem with semen,
and what have you done? You know, you must tell us. You can't come here and tell us the problem, challenge, but not telling us what have you done, what have you achieved. You know, we've got, when we were in Gordon's Bay, in Sapawari, we were recording this thing. And exactly what we have, each and every member here has got this, what you said to us, in February. All of them, all of us is here. So what we want change. We don't want to sit here from 2009 until 2014, speaking on everything. The DG has gone to all the provinces and found problems. What is being done? Over to you, Mr. Lamati.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. let me start by saying that it is not our intention as the Department of Labor to deceive the committee. Our intention is to state exactly what we have done, and the presentation that we've just done attempted to do so. If we gave an impression that there's been a cut and paste, maybe we didn't give context to that. And I'll try and do that now. The first thing that the committee said we must do, the committee said we must talk about the inspection and enforcement services focusing on the proposed alternatives to the professionalization model, the provision of tools of trade for inspectors. So what is prevented is the model in terms of how we are attempting to address the problems that we have with enforcement capabilities. That's the first thing.
We don't have the solution.
Chair, we think that what we've presented is a solution to the problem. And the structure and the model that we've presented, I'm trying to use the right English word, Chair, here. The model that we presented, we have the view that it will address the problem. And one of the things that I mentioned in the slide is that currently we're preparing ourselves to start with the recruitment. That's the first thing. And the model that is presented, maybe let me just explain it, because the Honorable Member raised the issue in terms of if you put one person, you're not going to solve the problem. It may appear if we're putting one, but you're not putting one person. Remember, the model cannot have everything. But in terms of the creation of the posts and the functions that have to be performed, you have people that have to come in. But the model is just to say, this is how I'm dealing with the current problem that we have. And I take the point that, yes, indeed, if you put one person, you're not solving the problem. But that's not what the model seeks to do. The model seeks to just display and the fact that this is how we are addressing the problem. And the recruitment of the people that will be filling the post will commence very soon, as I indicated in the presentation. I think that's the first thing. In the tools of trade, we did mention, Chairperson, that maybe what I did mention was that the Department of Labor took a decision to cancel the contract that it had with the with Pavis, with the cars, right? Now, inevitably, it meant that all the full cars that we had to go back to the service provider. Now, the department has now procured 225 cars and distributed those cars throughout the country. And right now, there's an order of 250 cars which will increase the pool to 275 cars. Now, which I think is one of the ways in which the department is trying to address the issue of the tools of it, because as an employer, we have to make sure that inspectors are out on a regular basis. I think that's what we captured in the presentation. What we did not, I accept the fact that we did not give you a breakdown in terms of how many people have applied for subsidized cars. Because there are inspectors who have subsidized cars, and there are inspectors who have applied for subsidized cars. And that's the information that we can provide to the committee, which will indicate how many they have applied, how many have been approved in the process, or how many cars in each and every province. That's the information that we can provide, Chair. The first thing, Chair, is with regards to the information management system. In the presentation, Chair, we indicated that we have asked Siemens to stop with the development of the application. And that's the clear indication that since our engagement with Siemens over the number of years, we did not get what we want from them. Currently, we don't have an information system. We don't have it. And that's why we realize that we're not getting anything from them. Let's stop it. And we were advised by the Chief Information Officer of the department that we can do that. And after the department has adopted a new ICT strategy, one of the things that the Chief Information Officer is going to do is to make sure that within the next 3 months, 3 to 6 months, there is a service provider that is going to assist the department to complete all the applications. So that's where we are with Siemens. We didn't get anything, and we didn't get the systems that we were looking for. I think those are the three things, Chair, that would try to cover the presentation. The fourth thing was with regard to the problematic sector. What we were trying to show in the presentation is that there's continued transgression. And I just want to state to the House that the responsibility to comply with the law rests with the employer. Our responsibility as the Department of Labor is to ensure that in cases where the employer is not complying, we enforce the law. And I can give you information with regards to the steps that we have taken as the Department of Labor to take those employers to task with regards to the fact that they are not complying with the law. So what we are trying to display and share with the committee is that these are the sectors that we have put on the radar screen of the department, and this is what we are doing to make sure that those sectors comply with the law. But this is the information that we can provide to the committee, and it was not our intention to conceal that information, or it was not our intention to do a cut and paste, and certainly that's not what we did. The information might sound is similar in the way in which it is presented, but it was not intention to do that. I think let me stop there.
Thank you, Mr. Amati. Honorable Mavizo, do you have something to say?
I have something to say. I understand what he's saying. He's just been explaining what they are doing. But then, I need to be clear and understand. Did you give us the information that you gave us in February? Today, the 9th of September, did you include the same information that we got in February? That's what I want to be certain of. Because this attempt case has been said. Now you need to tell us, did you really give us the same information that you gave us in February in today's document?
Assist Honorable Madu. I think what he is explaining, he said he was trying to explain in the presentation. There was no cut and paste. But now I think what they did,
you know, if you come to the department, I mean to the committee, you must unpack. I think you must unpack, because if you're going to present things the way you understand, that's where we're going to think you have done the cut and paste. The information that you've just said is so important, that you're telling us now when you're coming back. It's really very, very important. And now you must also tell us why you changed the model. You see, but I mean, you must unpack. That's the information that we want. Unpack. Honorable members, those who have more questions can do so, can pose the questions to the department. Honorable Jacobs, before Honorable Jacobs, can you indicate, but in the meantime, Mr. Lamani, can you respond to Honorable Mabit?
Thank you, sir. In what we did was to try and take the information that we gave you in February and start by saying, in the introduction, for instance, you will see that we started by saying, this is a problem that we identified. And that's the information that we gave to you in February. So in addressing that, because we have to give a background to the step that we're taking, where does that come from? So in the introduction, saying these are the problems that we're having, and that's the information that we gave you in February. But then we then say in the presentation, this is how we're addressing that problem. So yes, we gave you the information that we gave you in February, just to give you a background to the problem that we're addressing.
Okay, Honorable Jacob.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I just want to address myself on the issue of a model. This model does not talk to us. It's something which deals with, to me, it's a national model. It should be broken down to provinces. To say in this province, this is an agricultural province, we are having so many in this sector, in this sector, and it will need so many people. So as it is, it is silent. It does not say anything. And also, if you look at the number of people, they are not many. And we won't be able to address what we want to achieve. Because, for instance, if you say in Free State you have 7, and we are having 5 districts or regions, how are you deploying these people in all these regions? Because you must be able to service all the regions. And that's why I'm saying this model does not talk to us. I must know in the area where I come from, in Tawang Fuzanyan, how many inspectors are going to be deployed there, and in which sectors. So, as I'm saying, it does not say anything to us. It is just a round figure, and we don't know what is going to happen. The other one, we want to know, this number that you have, where are they going to be deployed? As I say, there are few. And we'll keep on saying, we don't service these people, or the employers who take an advantage, because they know quite well that you don't come to their to their areas because you are so few. So it means whatever model that we have, we must try to reach the employment where people are working. But as it is, I'm not so sure. Maybe if, because I'm sure right now you don't even have those figures, because I would be saying, give us a province, as we are from different provinces. And also, I'm just worried if you are saying we are going to recruit, you are going to publish this in September. In which paper? Where? Because we are having people, we are having constituencies. We need to tell them that go and look at this newspaper. There would be adverts which would be put on the so that it should also apply. Because we always cry that we don't create jobs. So if jobs are there, we must tell them there's going to be so many jobs, you can also make your own application. The other one is inspectors. When you employ them, are you going to train them? Or are you having people who know the job? But from where I am, I'm convinced these will be people who will need to be trained, because we are having different sections. So for a person to go into that section, we need to be trained. Also, to give them capacity, what will they have to do when they find that there is non-compliance? They must know the steps that they must take if the employer has not complied. And also these vehicles that you are talking about, are you assigning them to a special person? So if you are saying it's 270, so it means you are going to have about 500 vehicles. So it means each and every person is going to entitled to one car and so on. Maybe it's another clarity that I require with that. Thank you.
What I want to do from the department is we are actually 5 months away to our next budget term, and there are almost 9 months or 10 months in the existing budget term. They are advertising post empty seats. In their budget, they make provision for the new intakes in terms of the tools of life. Otherwise, you're going to employ people. People are going to be squeezed some in the corner for your next financial year to make provision for them, if it is provided for the in the existing. And what did you do with your savings, which you incur because only appointing in October? So which means they're having saved almost 10 months salary for this approximately 60 posts. Because that is there where the money goes down the drain. Chairperson, my other issue is around the sector, the farming sector, agriculture actually. All of us know. The other sectors which you listed there are most probably organized labor sector. But in the farming sector, it's the most exploited sector in terms of labor organizing them in one structure. You could see in the research made by the Women's Farm Project and your Legal Resource in 2009, where they stipulated that women get less than men in terms of benefits, in terms of salary. What did you do? Because that is an output. You must measure it. In terms of, do you actually manage to rectify it? So you can't have a situation with men, women on the same on the same scale being treated differently for men in terms of benefits and salary. So in the farming sector, chairperson, is the fact that, you know, in areas, I'm speaking about my problem, the Western Cape, you can't compete Stellenbosch with Riddendal or Mamelodi, Swartland. Because in Swartland, your farming sector are one of the major employees in the area. They're also one of the biggest economic contributors in the area. Now it gives them automatically a visa not to comply. The non-compliance in the area where farms are the largest employees and contributing to the economy of the area, that perception is that they don't need to comply. The figure which you give me there as a minimum figure on the farm for 1,000 to 1,500, I'm inviting you today to go to Mamelodi. Not tomorrow, today. I'm inviting you to go to Graaf-Reinet. you will hear that farmers are still owning 600 rentals, some of them 400 rentals. I don't dispute your figures, but I'm saying where I am. I'm experiencing a fact in Mamelodi, in Freedomdal, that people are getting much less than. I don't want to speak about the domestic workers. You don't serve them. That's the bottom line. People are still, you still find your child labor in the Western Cape. You're still finding your job self here in the Western Cape. Well, people are paid. At first you'll find my Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday and Monday, those money will be deducted because your pay was liquor. Chairperson, I want to come this in this occupational health team. In the same sector, farming sector, it is a foreign language for the workers on the farms. People are just exposed, they must work with no protection clothes, with chemicals which affect their health. It's a non-existing thing on the farm sector. I'm saying here, I just want to speak in the jurisdiction where I serve in Chairperson. There is nothing like occupational health. It's a word, I don't even think they'll be able to pronounce it correctly, because they never heard about it before. The issue of skills, Chairperson, my colleague raised the issue of skills. Now, we found labor laws which need to go and be enforced by your enforcement agents. But do they understand the labor law? What do they know what they're enforcing? Don't have an effect of your non-compliance level, which is so high, which you think that people don't comply, but it's because of your non-skilled labor who can't translate or explain or articulate the law or its finest writing. There should be the issue of skills, because laws are changing daily. And how do you keep actually your workforce around this thing? On the issue of trade schools, it was raised. I was very critical in that workshop about it, because we were told by your law enforcement agency, four or five of them, one must wait for the other one to come back, and he must use the vehicle for the whole week before attending to his cases. Young Kingdom, remember that? Mm. Young Kingdom were told that they don't have vehicles to move around, and where in the distance between them and the farmers, that takes 6 kilometers, for a matter of example. I want to appreciate the fact that you also make available the pool cars which is pooled, but those don't actually deal with the matter. Because if 50% of your workforce are on the beggars, which means you must always make provision for them to use cars. They won't be able to buy cars. I hope you understand where I'm going to. There must be other methods also. That's why I'm saying I appreciate you still allow them using the cars of the pool in terms of going forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Hoche. My first question was about the vehicles. I want to know on what base do you have the procured vehicles? Is it on a lease base or are we the owners? And who do the maintenance? Is it lease vehicles? And no, but if we are the owners of the vehicles, who do the maintenance? Because it's a lot of vehicles, and we've got a lot of drivers, and each and every driver handle the vehicle on his way. And then the next thing, the minister said to us rather she make a promise in 2011 that she will see that we will have an increase of numbers in our inspectors. So you touch on it. But I know, and I think the question already come up per province. If we have an increase in inspectors, how many in each province do we have? and in the different sectors as well. You mentioned here on slide 12 the problematic sectors. So you mentioned a couple of them. What I want to know is, and now you can rule me out of order, but I think it is important that we know the role labor is playing around the mines. I'm coming from the Northwest province, and that is a mining province, and as well as agriculture. But the burning point in South Africa at this stage is the mines. And what happens in Marikana is not something I think we want to have again in South Africa. What role do the Department of Labor play in the negotiations since the tragedy took place at the Longman mine? Were you there, and what role do you play? What is the way forward after yesterday's resolution regarding the salaries between the mine and the unions from the department side? And then I want also, how do the department assist the families of the passed away workers? After that, there was chaos in that area. We are not allowed to get into that area because the people do not want to see any politician at this stage. But I think you've got a big role to play as the Department of Labor, because all this that happened there was regarding salaries and the wages the people get. And I think that will be now a new burn point, because they've got a resolution and there was a big increase now, and that will flow over to other sectors now. And what are you going to do to resolve, and what a role are you going to play in all these things what is coming into the future?
Thank you, Chairperson. Some of the issues that I would raise have been covered, but I will pick on a few. Chair, I listened carefully when the update was done around the termination of the Siemens contract. But one chair has an understanding that the department had opted for a hybrid or a mixed approach in implementing the new information communication technology model. But now when you read that, it's more singular. If you look at slide 11. As a consequence of this strategy, a new service provider with requisite competences will be brought on board to finalize the outstanding application. Now, what one would need to add to that as to, are you talking of now one service provider or more than one? Then this one would be more of a seeking for the update, because we were told, in fact, that the current labor laws, I remember the DG used the term enough. If to bind, because then the country fellows not have enough gifts to bind, referring to a way of managing or deterring or stopping the errant employer. Now, when I listen here, I do not see anything which relates to labor law amendment towards this or would it be in a form of regulation? I don't know. I'm just checking. On the training of instructors, I understand that, Chair, since last year we have been getting briefing about the amendment, and we ask you now to pass such amendment bill. Now, is the training that is taking place so that the current and the instructors which are advised would then be in tune to be able to get into the new labor regime as we it would have been asked by Parliament? Thank you.
Mama Mapisa, Honourable Member Mapisa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to know what has the department done with regard to the problems faced with the cross-border migrations, as this is a phenomenon prevalent in the Musina region and the entire northern part of Limpopo, and this is causing new challenges for inspection and enforcement in South Africa.
Okay, from my side, unfortunately, Mama is not here. Number one, if you talk about compliance, it's supposed to be compliance from the employer's side to about the issue of labor, and also concerning the issue, the recommendations were made by Treasury. If maybe you can update us that how far are you, because you recommended something in terms of labor, in terms of which page is that? Yes, sir. There is a slide which is talking about that in terms of Treasury, that money which is recommended in the ETF. On slide number 4, if maybe you can update us that if you have been complying, how far are you? And then also, I wanted to find out about the issue of, there is an issue which was raised by Honourable Member Jacobs about the issue of advertisement and the like, but I will put a rider on it in terms of your recruitment. What is your relationship with the traditional leaders? Because most of the areas are in the rural areas. Some of the rural areas are backward in terms of ITs and the like. And then also what was raised last was the issue of lack of information and technology system. Remember in the past that you also acknowledge that the system doesn't talk to each other. And they also reported that the Siemens was withdrawn. What's happening? Have you improved on that one? And then the issue of, you see, Honorable Member DPR spoke about the issue of funds. There is a sector which is there, also Mama Mapisa, it comes back to Mama Mapisa, the issue of seasonal labor. How to protect them? Because they are not food camp, only seasonal. And they also, which I wanted to find out, you see, it's true, like in some of the provinces, if you go to Lebombo, KZN, most except Western, yes, it was a case also serving agriculture. I think agriculture is the dominating sector in terms of some of the section. And I don't know in terms of your proposal, in terms of your chronogram, if you can clarify us that what do you have in place in order to make sure that these sections are covered? Not specific like it, I was just making an example. In terms of the provinces, the real one, because you indicated that it's not, you can't put everything on board, you are just putting a skeleton. That's my understanding. In terms of your response, you are just putting a skeleton on it. You didn't put everything on board. And exactly, what do you have in your mind in terms of making sure that your model is geographically spread to the provinces? Are those there? I'm going to go, but I'll go to second round. And said to you, I didn't want to speak. Over to you then.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Kettle just will deal with the issue, with the questions relating to our role that we played in relation to what happened in America. So he'll touch on that. And Mr. Mukalebe will touch on issues relating to the amendment and how the training will be rolled out to our inspectors. And then Mr. Sana will touch briefly on the interaction with Siemens and how far are we with the way in which we're dealing with Siemens. The honourable member said that we flew from Victoria to here, so I'm trying to make sure that we all speak so that we can. We can justify the spending. the model itself, I think that was my first question. What we can do is we can, let me put it this way, if you look at the model the way it is now, It is what you want to see in a province. And then there's a slide there which is slide six. Now, this slide six starts by saying, based on the current funding allocation, because we are guided by what we have, but what has been allocated to us by Treasury, we would want to have and cover every aspect of our work which needs to be improved. The reality is, with the limited funding that we have been given, we will not be able to do so. And that is why, in our engagement with Treasury, we said, Treasury wants us to make sure that we spend the money, and then after that, we can then engage with them and say, in the process of rolling out this model, we need X, Y, and Z. But first, they want us to spend the 28 million which has been allocated to us for this year, and they've increased it by 4 million in the next year. And the next year, for 32 million, is just a carry through cost. It's not a new money that we must start filling new posts. It enables us to be able to pay the people that we appointed using the 28 million. So I just want to put the 60 million into context. We don't have new money in the next financial year. the issue of where these people are going to be deployed, I think it's an information that we can provide to the committee. We do not have that information now, but we can make sure the committee gets that information. The point that I'm trying to make, though, is that we want to make sure that in the way in which we spend the money is going to increase the effectiveness of the functioning of the inspectorate in each and every province. It may be a drop in the ocean in terms of what we want to do, but I think it gives us a good start so that we can build on that. Normally, the department advertises on the newspapers, the City Press, and I'm not sure that the City Press reaches every corner of the country. What we can do is we can talk to our HR just to make sure that we cover every corner of the country when we advertise. with regards to whether we are assigning, maybe let me just try and link the questions. I don't know, Honorable Chair, whether, like I said earlier on, whether we go as far as every corner and we talk to traditional leaders when we advertise. And I think maybe it's something that the respective provinces need to consider, because when we advertise, it's the responsibility of each and every province. To make sure that the adverts reach every corner. So I don't know whether that relationship has been established by the respective provinces. In a model, what we've been trying to do is we've been trying to say in most provinces where agri is highly prevalent, I'm just making an example of agri, in provinces where agri is a major economic activity, we want to make sure that we have more inspectors to cover that sector. I think that's the idea of this model, to make sure that we have more inspectors in the highly dominant economic sectors, just to make sure that we respond to the needs of different sectors. In the allocation, I think there was a question that says, do we make provision for the tools of trade for the new intake, and what happens to the savings? What is done is the allocation itself did not make any provision for tools of trade. Neither did the allocation make any provision for what we refer to as money that can be spent for furniture and all that. So we had to source money within the department to make sure that that is available, so that you can't appoint the people and they don't have desks to sit on, they don't have the necessary required tools to be able to do their job. So the savings that you refer to, we actually using those savings for that purpose. I understand the point you raised, and I agree with you entirely. And we know that we would want to be everywhere, but the unfortunate part is that we can't be everywhere. In instances, honorable member, where you know that these things are happening, I would beg that you let us know so that we immediately go there, because we're busy dealing with issues in other areas, and we don't know what is happening in those areas, because given the number of inspectors that we have, we are unable to be everywhere. I'm trying to be as honest as possible, so that we manage our expectations. You expect us to be everywhere, and we know that given the limited resources that we have, we cannot be everywhere. But if we're told that there's something that is happening in one area, we try and dispatch an inspector immediately to go to that area, to a specific area.
And I think now that you are here and you're here.
Yes.
I think that immediately when you leave here, just make a plan, and we need a response.
No, for sure. Chair, what we'll do is say that the honorable member says the issue of the area of Mama's Dairy and the craft rennet area. So immediately when we... Freedom Lands. Immediately when we leave here, we'll make a plan. And we'll then send the report to the committee. We are aware that in the farming community there are child labor issues, and in this very same province we have taken cases to court on child labor in this province. And it is, so the point I'm trying to make is that when we have spotted the cases of child labor, we have acted, and we have cases that we have successfully prosecuted as far as this is concerned. And we continue to educate employers on this, because the law prohibits any use of any child as far as doing work that will affect that child, that child's development. And the health and safety in farming sector, we're also aware of that. And that's why in the Limpopo province and Mpumalanga, together with unions and workers, established a project that we refer to as a roving safety rep project. And I'm happy to say in Mpumalanga that project received a premier's award in the Mpumalanga province. And there we're working with the farmers unions to make sure that there's improvement in compliance with occupational health and safety. And in Limpopo as well, the project is running, and we're now rolling it out in Northwest and Free State. So for working with those farming communities to improve the health. The idea, Chair, is to roll it out in all other provinces, but we want to do it in phases. So that's the plan that we have. Yes, our inspectors do understand the labor law because we continue to train them. And Mr. Mkhaleb will touch on what we're going to do with regards to the amendments once they are finally approved, finally signed off, because it's important to keep them updated. They are the ones who have the responsibility of enforcing this labor law. And it's the same thing with the inspectors that will be appointed. They will have to go through, we have what you call induction program, where all the new inspectors are required to undergo, because the understanding that we have is that even if you come in with a new qualification, your qualification says to us you have a potential to acquire competence, so we have to build that competence. And the induction program and other training programs that we have, they seek to build that competence that is needed. With regards to the pool cars, the department owns the cars. They are our cars, and we are responsible for maintaining those cars. And I think we've been having our own car now for the past since 2010, when we bought the green cars, what we refer to as green cars, the cars that with the inspector logos emblazoned on them. We've been owning those cars since 2010. And I think it's a continuation of that. And it has to do with cutting down the cost of cars. So we're responsible for maintenance of those cars. There was a question with regards to whether there will be an increase in the number of inspectors. Yes, there will be an increase in the number of inspectors. Although it probably would not be, it would not be an adequate increase, if I may put it that way, but there will be an increase. And we'll continue to lobby Treasury so that we get more money so that we can employ more inspectors, because we need more inspectors to cover the different areas. I think I'm going to ask Mr. Keruta to touch on the Maganda question.
Thank you, Chair, Acting Deputy. I'm going to start, I'm going to give an overview of the development at Maganda. You know, the tragedy happened on 16th of August. Now, within days, the President had established an inter-ministerial committee. That ministerial committee started meeting on the 20th of August, 4 days after the tragedy. The inter-ministerial committee included the Minister of Labour and others, Minister of Health, Minister of Social Development, Home Affairs, the Corps of the Governance and Traditional Affairs, and so on. So from that day onwards, the Department of Labour has been involved in the process. Now, the Inter-Ministerial Committee established a technical task team, which were officials from those ministries that are members of the Inter-Ministerial Committee. And we had participated in that technical task team right from day one. Within a week of that meeting, not even a week, within days of that first Inter-Ministerial Committee meeting, the Minister convened a meeting with NAPTU, the Federation, and AMCU, the union that has been involved at the mine. Now, as you will know, the industrial action there has been illegal industrial action, unprotected strike. But what we had thought to do was to then have meetings with all the key role players there. So following the meeting with AMCU and NAPTU, it was agreed that all the unions should be involved. So the minister then convened a meeting again with the NUM, with WASA, with Solidarity, and AMCU, and as well with the Lonmin management.
And out of that meeting, it was agreed that we should work towards a peace accord to bring stability to the mine, but also to begin to address the wage demand that the workers had. You may recall that the demand was 12,500 rand per month. Over time, we got variations of what the demand actually meant. Sometimes they referred to it as the minimum wage, then they referred to it again just as a wage demand, then they referred again to it as take-home pay, which means that you should be earning something like 16,000-17,000 rand if you want to take 12,500 home. So we then focused a lot on the issue of getting an agreement on peace. These meetings were then also attended by the South African Council of Churches, led by Bishop Chioka, who is currently the president of the South African Council of Churches. We then embarked on this process to achieve a peace agreement, which then culminated on the 5th of September in the parties, the majority of the parties, signing what we refer to as the London-Marikana Peace Accord. All the parties that were there, except AMCU and the workers' group, there were eight workers that were speaking on behalf of the workers outside the trade unions. They were also invited, firstly, to come and brief all of the unions about the developments there. But when we then drafted the peace accord and got agreement by the majority of the unions and the company there, that peace agreement was signed, peace accord was signed on the 5th of September. But because AMCU had not signed and the workers group, the eight workers did not sign, the process continued. To the point where the minister had also met separately with some of the delegations. But the process then continued with the company to seek to deal with the wage demand. So the company made an offer about a week ago as a settlement of the wage issue. The workers did not accept that, was rejected. Also throughout the process, I should mention that we had brought in the CCMA, because the CCMA is the dispute resolution agency in the country. Collective bargaining at the company takes place between the company and the unions there. And despite this, this agreement that existed there for 2 years, an agreement in place now, would only terminate next year or expires next year, that deal with wages and conditions of employment. So what the workers raised was now in conflict with that agreement. And we had to then get, and it's the role that the department and the CCM played, to get the union that are party to the agreement, which is NUM Solidarity in Water, to agree to reopen that agreement. Because they were party to the agreement, they had agreed on conditions of employment and wages. Now, if you want to now deal with this new wage demand, you then have to reopen that agreement. Because you now want, you're seeking a change to a part of the agreement, which is the minimum wages part. So the unions then agreed that they are open to reopen that agreement for the process of negotiation then to commence on the 12,500. Now that process then unfolded. The company made an offer. The workers rejected that. Then the workers revised their offer on Friday. Their demand on Friday, which is a quite a ridiculous revision of the demand, to say we're no longer demanding 12,500 rand, we now demand 12,499 rand. This is 1 rand less. Of course, we try to keep the process together so that people don't walk away, so that the company don't issue an ultimatum, because the company could also not dismiss those people, despite the fact that it's an illegal strike. Because those workers live on the doorstep of the mine. So if you dismiss 3,000 workers and you want to employ new 3,000 workers, those dismissed will not allow those new ones to come in. So they couldn't do that. So we had to get the social dialogue process alive, for people to talk, to try and come to settlement.
The company then yesterday made an offer, which was then accepted by everybody. And in fact, the agreement was signed last night. And the agreement provides generally for a 22% increase, which includes 10% that was due in October in terms of the existing agreement. So the company then, in fact, offered a 12% more than what the October adjustment would have been. So the summary of the agreement is that it's a 22% pay rise generally. The Rock Grill operators will now get 11,078 rand before deductions. Production team leaders will get 13,022 rand per month. Operators will get up to 9,883 rand per month. And then they have agreed to give all the workers, these ones that were on strike, a once-off bonus of 2,000 rand. And they will return to work tomorrow morning. So this is a role that the Department of Labor, together with the CCMA, has played, to keep the process together, to get the bargaining process to be dealt with, to deal with the wage demand. But over and above that, we have been also looking at the deaths that had occurred. We had liaised with companies concerned to identify where those people had been working. Because if we just say, out of the 34 people that were killed on the 16th of August, three of them were non-union members. One person is a person that was medically bothered in 2009. So he was no longer an employee of the company, but he was killed on the 16th. The two others were killed that were dismissed in 2011, so they were not current employees of the company. They also killed. Now, out of the 34 people, 29 were South Africans, 4 were from Lesotho, and 1 from Swaziland. Now, those burials that have taken place, all of them have now been buried by the 15th of September. All of them have been buried. Now, of the 44 people, remember there's the number of 44, because before the 34, there were 10 killed in the previous week. Now, 37 of the 44 people are London employees, or were London employees, of which 5 were foreigners. That's the 4, the Sotho, and the 1 Swaziland. There was 1 person from FHL Contracting, 1 person from the shaft sinkers, and 3 unemployed people, and then 2 from the police, and that makes up the 44 people. We have been working with the technical team under the auspices of the Interministerial Committee, where especially social development had made social workers available, attached social workers to each of the bereaved families, to assist with counseling, to assist with funeral arrangements, and so on. The Department of Health facilitated expediting the postmortems. They were all done at the Grankua Hospital. On our side, we were looking at these in terms of qualification of unemployment insurance fund benefits to determine whether they were contributors. And if they were contributors, their next of kin would be entitled to the deceased contributors benefits from the unemployment insurance fund. We have received all the declarations from Lonman. Contributors must be declared by the company to the UIF fund. Now, Lonman has declared 32 out of the 7 of the 37 people that were employed by them. The 5 were foreigners. They didn't contribute to the UIF. And of course, the others, FHL Contracting, had contributed. They're covered by UIF. The job seeker is covered by UIF. And the police are obviously covered through the government employee pension fund and compensation fund. So those were all declared, and we have now forwarded that information because these people are from across the country. The details of the of those deceased contributors have now been submitted to the Eastern Cape, our Eastern Cape offices, to KZN, Department of Labor, to Mpumalanga and Gauteng, to enable them then to assist the dependents to claim the benefit due to them under the Unemployment Insurance Fund. So that is just around the situation, and we're happy that it is now stabilizing with the workers returning to work tomorrow. But for the medium to long term, we are also engaged in processes to ensure stability into the future. We have had, under the auspices of the Ministers of Labor and Mineral Resources, started a process with the platinum companies as a whole, so that you don't have this thing going from Donman to Royal Bafokeng to Aquarius to Implus and so on. So there is a positive response from the platinum companies to move to a sectoral bargaining arrangement, like you have in gold and like you have in coal. So also working with the Chamber of Mines, we are embarking on this process now where these companies have indicated that they are willing to explore a sectoral level forum where they can deal with wages and working conditions on a sectoral level rather than a company by company basis. Meetings have now been set up for next week where we will then have engagements with the platinum employers together with the trade unions in the platinum sector to look at the modalities of bringing this together and also to look at a broader peace process for the entire platinum sector so that we do not have this thing just rearing its head now and then. So that is the process going forward. And as I said, we're working closely with all the employers, with the Chamber of Mines, and also with the trade unions. All of the trade unions, except AMCU, we expect that by today or tomorrow, AMCU will formally indicate that they are also participating in this process, the sectoral process. But all the other unions have indicated that already. Then just lastly, as you are aware, the President had established the Commission of Inquiry. 2 days ago, Monday, there was a session with the Commission itself, led by Judge Ian Farlam, together with the other two members of the Commission, where they have briefed all the key stakeholders about how the Commission is going to conduct its inquiry. And the Commission has scheduled that they will start the inquiry on the 1st of October, where they will start off with a in-local inspection of the area where the tragedy happened, and thereafter they will then convene to then deal with the issues where different parties and stakeholders will make representations and so on. And as was indicated in the press release from the presidency, then the commission should complete task within 4 months, its report. So they are going to try and meet that deadline. So that, and we are also involved in that process. We'll be monitoring the developments as the commission unfolds. So that is, in summary, the issues and how we have been involved in the process of bringing stability at one, but more generally also to the technical sector. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. I'm going to report on the IT side, the case management. I'll give a bit of detail as the Honourable Committee has requested, so that you can see what the Department of Labour has done and the commitment to try and get the system in place. Historically, we have been working with manual systems generally, and the only computer systems that existed, there were some in place, and there were also specialized systems such as for the health and safety side. The provinces could enter the information onto a system, and that information was available. Those systems, however, are relatively archaic today, considering when we started, as per the slide, when the indication was given, up until last year, the beginning of last year. We have been working with Siemens, and over the course of time, we have been involved in tests. Last year, Siemens had the ninth project manager join the project, and during that time, we have done various tests on the system, going through up until August this year. During the course of July of this year, we did what we call the testing in a live environment, because we thought we had reached the point. The difference between February this year and up until now is that we have worked with Siemens to try and get to a point where the system could be used. We are ever found that there were what we call showstoppers. Those showstoppers would not allow the system to operate in an environment where our people would use the system. They would not use it. In fact, they would go back to the manual system that they were using. We couldn't implement that. As indicated, we had quite a number of issues that were outstanding, more than 100, as for the slight indication. And in August, we decided, due to the fact that the contract is also coming to an end, that we really could not go ahead in the current situation after trying and committing ourselves and almost 9 sets of testings that we have worked with Siemens on, we could not proceed. So currently, we are still using what was in place. We are trying to, as far as we can, report as accurately as we can on the information. Not an ideal situation, but we can't pull our system into operation. That's not going to deliver what we expect it to deliver. You will know that we have a chief information officer that has joined the Department of Labor, and as indicated earlier, there is a strategy in place. And it's going to address some of the issues or the problems that we're experiencing. One of those issues is how do we move forward, considering the fact that we are not continuing with the current development or the finalization of the system as it stands right now. There is some tweaking that needs to be done to that, but we do not believe that Siemens has the ability at this stage, or the local people have the ability within Siemens to finalize it as we anticipate. We do, however, believe that the confidence does exist within the country and that we can, in fact, finish it. We're using SAP as the base, which we all know it has a world name to it, and we do believe that if the right people are brought on board, we can have it tweaked in the right way for utilization. As to whether or not there will be one service provider or several, that remains a decision of the Department of Labor under guidance of the Chief Information Officer. That is something that is being finalized at the moment. We do believe that if they bring someone on board, we have indicated quite clearly from our side that we must look for the right people to assist us in finalizing this matter. There has been progress up to a point, and that point is the fact that there are still issues outstanding. I think, Chair, with that, we do remain committed to finalizing this issue, and we are hoping that if we bring the right people on board now, that within the next 3 to 6 months, working with them, we can finalize whatever is still outstanding. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. There are 2 questions that I was asked to respond to. One is the one on how do we protect seasonal workers. In terms of our legislation, all workers in South Africa, if you work more than 24 hours a month, the protections that are built in our law apply to you first. The BCA applies, the Unemployment Insurance Fund applies if you work for more than 24 hours. Therefore, what this means is that if seasonal workers, when they are working in that season that they work in, they work more than 24 hours a month, the legislation comes in. If they work in the farming sector, the sector designation kicks in. Therefore, their protection is the same as all other workers working in that sector if they work for more than 24 hours. There's no separation. When inspectors go out and do their job, they've got an obligation to ensure that all workers within that environment that affect that, if there's a sector designation, by the sector designation, they get the necessary protection. And I repeat this, if they work more than 24 hours a month. If you work less than 24 hours a month, then the protection does not cover you. The BCA does not apply to you if you work less than 24 hours a month. Now, the other question was whether do we intend to train up inspectors on the amendments that we put on the table. When the amendments were introduced as a bill in 2010, we went out and took through the public to the amendments in terms of what is it that they are proposing. And again, when we again the amendments were released again and that cabinet went to our provinces and took a follow-up on that, and not only to our inspectors, also to the members of the public, but to the inspection also, indicated to them, taking them through the changes. We have not done anything since, precisely because the parliamentary process is still continuing on the bills, and as you as members would know, that the National Assembly is dealing with the issue. It's going to come to the Council of Provinces as soon as it's finalized there. And we don't want to put resources and time in taking it in further through on the amendments in case there are changes in the parliamentary process. What is going to happen is that as soon as the parliamentary process is finalized, and as you know, members, that there's that period where we're waiting for promulgation by the president, sometimes take 3 to 4 months, we'll use that process to ensure that our inspectors are ready to implement this. Thank you very much.
Chair, I think there's just one last question that we did not respond to, the question on the cross-border migration. For us as a department, really doesn't it makes no difference. In fact, if you are a foreign employee or you are a local employee, the law applies generally. So this notion that that most employers have, especially in the farming environment, that they can take in foreigners, whether they are in country legally or illegally, and pay them far below the minimum wage is against the law. And whenever we have picked that up, we have acted. In fact, there are occasions where we've worked with the immigration officials, and we have spotted that the employees were paid below the minimum. We've asked the employer to make sure that those employees are paid what was due to them, and the immigration officials dealt with issues relating to immigration. So we do work together with immigration officials in to deal with those situations. Thank you.
I just failed to add that one of the legislations that is in now in front of the National Assembly is the one dealing with employment services, which will assist in this process in regulating the permits and the allowing of people to come, those that are coming legally. That legislation, when it's in front of the Council of Provinces, you will see it's facilitating that process and is going to assist in preventing a situation where we're talking only about those that are coming legally. Workers coming into the country, even if they are not needed. Companies going outside and bringing in foreign labor when we know that there is that labor in the country. That's what that legislation is trying to do. It's not going to be able to deal with the illegal part, but it's regularizing how you bring in labor legally into the country. The illegal part, as he has said, is this immigration official, Department of Home Affairs, trying to do it and fix that.
Thank you. Honorable Jacob.
Yeah, thanks. I would request the department to send us that breakdown according to provinces with regard to the model that they have given us. But just out of interest, I know this is not part of the agenda, but just raised by Honorable Kroonewald on the issue of Marikana. I know it's going to come back to us again as the Department of Labor. Maybe let's thank the department for the role that they have played to bring peace and stability into that area. But what I want to raise, it was an extraordinary situation which needed extraordinary measures to bring stability and peace. Because here you find work representation, which is not part of our labor law. I'm not sure whether AMCU is registered. Is it registered, you know, or not?
Yes.
It is. Okay.
They've been registered since 2001, July 2001.
Okay. But what is going to be the implication of all this as we move forward?
for instance, people who were leaders who aren't registered to be part of negotiations. Is it going to lead us to change? To change law to accommodate such instances? That's what I want to know. The other one, I just want to out of this settlement, what is the take-home wage of the employment? I understand they are getting 11,000 because what they are crying about, they think they earn about 4,000, 5,000. And now, how does it improve now from the settlement that they've got? Where are they now? Because that was their battle cry to say what they are earning little. But now we have reached 11,000. Because earlier, what we read on the papers, they were saying if you add other benefits, they are bringing that money to about 10,000. And now the settlement is 11,000. Can you just explain us what is the take home? After this new arrangement.
Chair, it's difficult to give the take home now because we haven't got all the details of the breakdowns. But the information that we got was that the 11,000, the 9,000, and so is before deductions. Now, you could probably take away something between 25% and 30% of that amount for deductions. But there is an improvement, but not what they want. I mean, there was no way that the company was going to afford 12,500 take-home pay for everybody. It's impossible. The company is already facing a number of problems. And we shouldn't be surprised that along the way there's going to be retrenchments there. Already it was announced yesterday that the company is terminating Murray Roberts, one of the subcontractors, which will lead to a loss of 1,200 jobs. Now those are contractors, and it could be that there's no need for them because contractors are contractors. They come for a specific function and then they leave after they completed their function. So they're not renewing that from October, the news reports were. But there will be an improvement in the take-home pay, obviously. Because at the bottom they wanted, it was like 4,600 rand. The first offer was to take it to about 5,600 rand basic. But that has now changed with settlement of yesterday. We haven't got the breakdown, we just got the broad figures today. This is what they will now get, but it's a 22% increase overall for them. It is not satisfying the demand, but it is a movement towards getting an improvement in the basic wages there. But it's not close to the 12,500 rand take home, or even 12,500 minimum. That they were talking about, because the general workers would be before tax, before deduction, 9,800, and that's way off from 12,500 already. So I think the 2,000 rand offer, they call it in agreement a signing incentive bonus. So that's what they call it, yeah. In the discussion, there's been some dissatisfaction from the workers that were working during the process to say we also wanted, but they were to say no. There's a particular circumstance, the context in which it was originally 1,500 that was offered. The context in which that was offered was that week of mourning, where workers would not have been expected to be at work. So it already was then offered as an incentive for people to come back after the week of mourning to say, if you come back, I think the date was the 7th of September. If you come back from that 7th of September up to the 14th of September, you get the 1,500 rand. But the workers rejected that. So now it's been up to 2,000 rand, and that is, it was called the sweetener at that time. The sweetener. So now the sweetener has worked that the 2,000 rand has now enabled them to agree to go back to work. But we'll, no, it can't have an impact on labor laws. Everybody is agreeing on unprotected strikes, the illegal strikes. The implications would be that the unions out there need to consolidate their positions there. The NUM needs to consolidate its workplace structures, its organizational structure there, similarly to the other unions. If not, of course, if workers are dissatisfied with the service a union renders, then they're free to resign and join another union. That's freedom of association. We have ratified the Convention on Freedom of Association. Our law, the LRA, provides for freedom of association. But that's a challenge that the established unions now have to deal with, is to how do they consolidate going forward so that you do not have a repeat of the situation where workers say, we have no confidence in you and we're going to represent ourselves. Because if that is going to be the trend, then it will be a trend that will be having a negative impact on union organization in the factory. And may very well go into, it should also be a wake-up call for unions in other sectors where workers are complaining that they're not getting services anymore. And the signals have been there for some time now, over a long period, that unions must get back to the basics. I think in the Kotatu Congress, some of the speakers had raised the issue that we need to get back to basics, get back to organizing and servicing workers. Then you want to have the thing happening again. Thank you.
Thank you so much, members. I think we've come to the end of the meeting, but we will await the information that we have requested, Selamani. And also, hopefully, the department will also follow up on issues that were raised during, for the children who, for the deceased, so that, you know, we don't find children in the street. I think, you know, the inter-ministerial committee that is there, I think as labor will also be part of it. And also to say you must also look at the domestic workers. Domestic workers, if that can also, you know, because I didn't hear you raising them. Thank you. Maybe it's because I'm... Yes, I know. I'm a domestic worker at my house. Okay. But next time you mustn't do that. If you see that information is there, and you must put it and bring it to the number. But thank you very much. When are we meeting? We will see when we're going to meet. Like I say, on other things, we will come to Pretoria. And then you go to me, and some colleague. The men's fire. So please. Okay, thank you for coming, and the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you, honorable members. I think this is our last meeting. We will see each other.